Hi, my name is Minton. I'm an addict. My topic is why we stay. I don't know why everybody else stays, so I'm going to tell you my story, and I'm going to tell you why I stay. My clean date is March 28, 1989. In 1989, I was 38 years old, and I had. I'm from D.C. I was 38 years old, and this was my age when I stopped using. Prior to getting to Narcotics Anonymous, I had been a lot of places. I've been to a lot of methadone clinics. I've been to a couple of psychiatric wards. I tried medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of those methods seemed to work for me. The last stop that I made was a psychiatric ward. And I really wanted to stop because I had started using a drug I didn't even like. You know, cocaine is not my drug of choice because I had a problem with mania. I was hyperactive. And so people, when I was using it, you know, guys that were selling drugs, they used to come uptown and they'd have cocaine on them, and they would give it to me. You know, I thought they were giving it to me because I was special. It just never dawned on me who was giving it to me, so they wouldn't catch a charge with it on them. And I would trade the cocaine off with, and I didn't have any measuring stick or trading it off because I didn't know its value. All I know is it didn't mean nothing to me, and I needed heroin. So I smoked this cocaine for 8 years. 8 whole years, and I didn't, it's not my drug of choice. So when I got to the psychiatric ward, I was tired because I had like 50 spots in my face. They were all self-inflicted wounds. Because when I smoke cocaine, I feel things crawling in my skin, and I feel dirty, and I was trying to get the dirt out, you know. I weighed about 79 pounds, soaking wet. I didn't have any circulation in my hand. One of my fingers wouldn't even move. And I had an ache in my arm that ran down my hand. And the ache was like a toothache, and it hurt me so bad I would tie a scarf around it to constrict the veins to stop the pressure that would cause the ache. And I had the same ache in my leg, and I would tie a scarf around it, and I continued to smoke. I couldn't breathe. I had bronchitis. My chest was closed up, and my solution was if I hit the pipe, it would open my chest up, and I could breathe. And this is what I did. I'm just trying to explain to you just how sick I really was, because the bronchitis came from smoking cocaine. So the very thing that gave me bronchitis, I was smoking that to relieve the symptoms of the bronchitis. So anyway, I wind up on the psychiatric ward, and when you go in with health insurance, this guy, you know, I've been living with this guy for 17 years, and just so you know, he was somebody else's husband, but that didn't matter to me. So anyway, so I get on the psychiatric ward, and they give me this little piece of paper. They give you a piece of paper, tell you to pick your meal out for the day. You know, when you go to treatment centers, you eat whatever they feed you, but when you go to psychiatric ward with health insurance, you get to pick your meal. So I hadn't been eating for a long time, because when you smoke cocaine, if you eat, as soon as you hit the pipe, your bowels break. So my solution was not to stop smoking cocaine. What I needed to do was to stop eating so I could continue to smoke. So when I got on the psychiatric ward, she asked me what I wanted to eat, and I checked off I wanted filet mignon. I want two, because you know they're small. I needed two baked potatoes, extra butter, extra sour cream, and a salad. And so I'm on the psychiatric ward watching all the other people in there who are obviously crazy. Got a lady in there don't eat, you know, they are feeding her intravenously because she's trying to control her husband through not eating, you know. I got a guy in there, old guy, old lawyer, he don't work no more, he's rich. But he was hooked on pain pills, and his veins in his hand was as big as my finger. They were blue. couldn't breathe, he was in pain. And all he used to say all day was, Lord, take me now. Lord, take me, take me. He was getting on my nerve. I mean, all these people. But I had bypassed the fact that no matter how crazy they were, I was right there with them. You know, so anyway, when the lunch came, the girl bought me meatloaf and something. I don't know. All I know is meatloaf. I don't eat no other fucking meatloaf. Meatloaf is ground up meat. I don't know ground up what parts, and I don't eat it. So I took it back up there, and I look, this is not what I asked for. And I don't know why I was thinking this, but the girl was back at a little podium in the middle of the psych ward, and little desk where you go up and ask for stuff and tell her what you need. My thinking was she did that on purpose because she jealous. Now, she work on the psych ward. I'm a patient on the psych ward, and I don't look cute. I don't know, but this is the kind of stuff I used to think. I used to always think people were doing things to me on purpose. So she said, well, fill it out another one, and we'll straighten it up at dinner. So I did what she told me to do. So dinner come, and they bring me another meatloaf. I don't know. I need you to understand, I'm not a fighter. I have never been a fighter. I will talk you out of anything, but I'm not going to be doing no fighting unless it's absolutely necessary, because I'm not a gorilla. I manipulate people. I annoy people. I'm a parasite and a tick. I'm not a bully. You know, that's just not me, but I hit her. I hit her. And when I drew my hand back, the security guard had it. So they took me in the back, put me in one of them rooms, locked the door, you know, girl outside the room with a key, with a pad, taking notes, watching through the window. And then they come and get me at the end of the day, and they take me to another room. We go in the room, and it's a table. It's like an oval table. It's 12 people sitting around it, all 12 of them are doctors. I see the little students in the white jackets going in the back door behind the mirror. I already know I'm a lab experiment, but I'm 38 years old. I'm smoking cocaine against my will. My mother pities me. She looks at me with pity. She sits in her bed and sings Amazing Grace every time I come through the door. She is baffled. My whole family is baffled. They used to think that I was going to be somebody. They used to think that. They already know I'm smart, but see, this ain't got nothing to do with my IQ. It's all had to do with how I feel inside. So these guys, they started asking me questions in the room. And even though I know they all back there looking at me with their little pads, and they students, and they taking notes, and I'm a lab experiment. This is my bottom. This is the end. I don't have nowhere else to go. I can't go back to the methadone clinics. Some of them I couldn't go back to because my time limit wasn't up from when I gave them last batch of dirty urines. You know, you can't give up dirty urines and then come back next week and say, I want to get back on the methadone. You got to wait. You got to hold a period. So they asked me all these questions. I answer them. And at the end, the guy said, well, Miss Germany, and I don't have a problem with my anonymity because I don't work nowhere no more. I'm 65 years old. I don't work nowhere. You know, so, and Social Security can't take my check because I'm in Narcotics Anonymous. So he said, Ms. Germany, well, what is it that you want from us today? I told this man the truth. I had never told anybody the truth in all of my life. I lied when the truth will serve the same purpose. And I said, my life had been like a roller coaster. I said, I'm tired. And I want it to be like this. The 12 doctors didn't even look at things. You know how, you know, you have an interview with somebody, they leave out the room and go discuss what you said, and then they come back and then they give you the results. Nobody left. They looked at each other and nodded their head. I didn't know what they were doing. The head man spoke up and he said, Miss Germany, we're going to discharge you. He said, there's nothing that we can do for you in 28 days. And I doubt if you can ever live without drinking and drugging. I was devastated. This was my last stop. My last stop. And that same security guard came and got me, rode me down in the elevator, and turned me loose on the street. Because they said it was no use in them taking the insurance company's money because they couldn't help me. And God, look, so I wind up in 2 Genesis because he said it was a slight possibility if I went somewhere like 2 Genesis for rap. So I wind up in 2 Genesis, stayed in there for 7 months. And I was so grateful in the beginning, and then I started doing what I do. I go in, I find out what the rules are, I fly under the radar, and shit get hot, I back out before the police come. That's what I do. And one day they came in there and they told me about something about my daughter and what I needed to do, and I swole up on them and told them I was grown. Who the fuck they think they're talking to? And I wind up, I left, and this guy brought me to Narcotics Anonymous, and he said, all you got to do is chase these meetings the way you chase drugs. That's all I did. Wasn't no 90, and I think if I had came in when they started telling people 90 and 90, I'd be using. Because if I stayed in a meeting for 90 minutes, I had a whole lot of time left in the day. These people drug me around from meeting to meetings, from 12 noon to 10:30 at night, every day. Every day. I meet them at 12 noon and they pass me around like a football. And they said, that girl, there's something wrong with her. She ain't gonna make it. But what happened was, in the beginning, I went to this meeting with the other program, and it was something in there that hit my gut. They said that there are those of us with grave emotional illnesses. But there is a chance for you if you can get rigorously honest. And God could and would if you could saw it. I didn't even know the magnitude of my illness when I heard that, but something in my gut flipped. And that's all I did. And I did. I got better. My first year, everybody showed up. They showed up because they were surprised I stayed. They had banners. They had cameras. One girl in there had to tell the man, you can't take pictures in here. This is an anonymous program. I mean, banners. Somebody had made a banner at work. They couldn't believe it. Not only did I stay that year, I done stayed every year after that. Because I know this is the place where I'm supposed to be. My first sponsor, I didn't pick her. Guy knew me on the street. He said, come here, girl. He had said, shit you do, I don't know, shoot these niggas in here, kill you. They're killing here. He said, well, come in here with that crap. And he gave me that sponsor, and I took her. I took her because I didn't know. I had pretended all my life I knew what to do. Pretended. I pretended I understood things that I didn't understand. My first sponsor died. My second sponsor, she sent me to the psychiatric ward 5 years clean. I called her one day at work and I said, this bitch come in my office one more time, I'm gonna fuck her up. She said, well, who you talking about? I said, my supervisor. She said, where you at right now? I said, I'm in here with the door locked. I want her to tell me how to get this woman up off my back without hitting her. But she told me to get my hat, my coat, and my keys, and my purse. Don't say nothing to nobody and go to the emergency room and tell them what you just told me. What kind of shit is this? Is she supposed to tell me read something in the book or something? She's supposed to tell me something profound. So I didn't believe her. So I called my health insurance people, and they start asking me the same question. Well, where you at? I said, I'm at work with the door locked. She said, baby, hold on for a minute. She put me on hold, came back. She said, Ms. Sherman, you still here? Dr. Sorrell, here she is. She done went and got a psychiatrist on the phone. He told me the same thing. He said, young lady, I want you to get your coat, get your purse, don't say nothing to nobody, and come straight to my office. And I wind up on the psychiatric ward, 5 years clean. Best thing ever happened to me. This sponsor has passed too, but she saved my life. Drugs is not my problem. I have mental health diagnosis. I suffer from depression. I have a bipolar disorder. I have PTSD. I have a lot of trauma. And because I'm so much better than I was when I first got here, when I got 20 years, I got witnesses. There they go. I'm serious. They got more time. Look, they out there. I got witnesses. I ain't making shit up. I was spitting and spinning on people like you wouldn't believe. People were avoiding me. Avoiding me. Not because they were afraid of me. They didn't know what I was going to do or what I was going to say. I was unapproachable. That's not the case today. This is an awesome program. This is, so when I got 20 years clean, I went back to school, got a degree, graduated with honors. I'm in a National Psychology Honor Society too. I stayed on the dean's list all the way through, from head to toe, all the way through. I did all of that. But that ain't got nothing to do with the disease of addiction. Absolutely nothing. And I can go into jail and I can talk to men that the other counselors that they had my experience in using drugs can't go. But that ain't got nothing to do with why I keep coming back. I keep coming back because when I got 20 years clean, and since I was so drastically different from the way I was when I came in, I thought I could retire. Well, wasn't nobody with me but the last person I used with. Old thinking started coming back. People at the 7-Eleven were in jeopardy. People at the Giant were in jeopardy. People at the Whole Foods were in jeopardy. Because I started doing what I always do. I rely on me. I listen to my own thinking. And shit gets stinking. An addict alone is in bad company. Everybody I associate with, mostly, 99% or 98% of them were in Narcotics Anonymous. I don't even talk to my family. Because they're the people that sent me here. I got permission to do that from my sponsor. I don't have to keep going into unhealthy environments to prove that I'm recovering. I can forgive somebody in the 8th step or the 9th step without having to continuously put myself in a position to be re-abused. You know, so I'll go to work, I'll do my job. Things were just different. And sometimes I intuitively know what to do, but I intuitively know I need to check with somebody before I do it. I know this. Because I didn't just file bankruptcy when I was 5 years clean. I filed it again when I was 25 years clean. I rendered myself homeless at 25, 26 years clean. And I ain't found nowhere in the world I can go through those kind of things and still be motivated to participate in my own life. When I go home, I'm comfortable. I'm really comfortable isolating. If you see me outside, you would never know it. I'm like a social butterfly. But my disease would get me at home and start telling me again that I'm worthless because I done messed up that house my mama bought me. I'm worthless because I had a car accident. And I got a short-term memory problem, and I can't work no more. I'm disabled, and because I can't take care of myself. This is the only place that I can go and tell people honestly where I am, and they still love and accept me when I can't love and accept myself. My family won't do it. They in denial. They still in denial. They don't want me to have the mental health issues, and they definitely don't want me to have the brain issue. So some people think, because I can talk, that I can work. That's not true. I can't do paperwork. The job I had required a lot of paperwork. I didn't know what I had did, what I needed to do, and where I had filed shit, and what I needed to pull. I didn't know none of that. I couldn't remember it. So I was always checking myself all day. All day. This is the only place that will accept me exactly as I am and not try to make excuses or deny me knowing who I am. This is the only place I know where I can do that. And I thought I had got enough from y'all. I really did. I thought y'all had gave me enough so I could go home and I don't have to be bringing my old ass out here to the meetings. But I get lonely and I start having them crazy thoughts. See, those thoughts were in reinforced and ingrained in me at an early age. I come from a domestic, violent home. My father was a drunk. He called me bitches. He told me I was gonna never be nothing. He told me people were gonna kill me before I turned 21 because of my mouth. These are the kind of tapes I got running in the back of my head. And if I don't come to meetings or participate with a sponsor or a group of guys that make me feel like something, that tape start running and I start buying into that shit and I start feeling like I did when I needed a bag of dough. And I don't think using is my worst option anymore. I don't want to be old, crankety, and crazy. I live in a senior citizen facility, and these people don't have, love will kill you. A lack of love will kill you. I'm watching them. They dried up, mean and miserable. Ain't nobody visiting them. They ain't got no, the relatives don't come and see them. I told you I don't talk to my family. So that means I'll be right in there with them. Lonely, miserable. But I keep coming back because this is the only thing, that has worked for me. This is better than therapy. It's better than a pill. You know they won't give me some pills too. I don't want to take the pills. I got y'all. It's working for me. And I don't want to die with a broken heart. And I have never been loved in my life the way that people in this program loved me. My family told me they loved me, but they didn't treat me like they loved me. And my motto today is F what they say and watch what they do. And this program has done that for me. You know, so I don't know why other people stay. And the only reason, the other reason I stay is throughout my time and being here, I have ran into a lot of people with mental health issues. And it's a secret. That's their secret. They need to know that there are other people that have mental health issues and that the program works for them. They need to know that people will love you even when they find out that you have mental health issues. They need to feel accepted and that they're in the right place too. There are also people around here that get a lot of time and they become homeless. But they don't tell nobody. So some people get homeless and they go hide. They go hide because they don't want nobody to know. No, you'll be homeless and still come to meetings. How you gonna find somewhere to live if you ain't coming to me? Every bit of good information I got, I done got it out of here. You know, so I come back But so people won't have to be ashamed. That's my job. Ain't got nothing to do with Narcotics Anonymous. It's personal. It's between me and God. Because he done saved my ass so many times. I've had people look at me and tell me, girl, I've been watching you and I've been waiting for you to break. But I just keep coming back and I keep telling them, it ain't me. It's God. You gotta. That's the other thing they said. There is but one power that could relieve this problem we got. And that's God. And you need to find him, like right now. Find him and find him now. That's it. And that's what's helped me. You know, a lot of times, you know, people be thinking I got money in my sock. I ain't got no money. I got a Social Security disability check. That's why I ain't never heard no broke people buying no new car. You know, look like every time I see you got on a new outfit. God, I serve. Do me like I ask him to do me. He helped me. And don't get mad at me. Because you can have the same opportunity. I rely on God because I know when I steal. Let me tell you what happened when I steal. When I steal something with my petty behind, I'll lose something 10 times as valuable as the item that I steal. That's the only reason. I ain't no walking on water kind of girl. I did the math. If I steal $10, I get home and I'm $100 short. And I don't know where the 100 went. I done dropped it somewhere. I'm telling you, this is how my life is. I don't do stuff to other people. I don't do stuff to other people because I have to go to God too much to be petty with his people. So if I treat you like a piece of crap, what I look like going asking God to help me? Listen, did you forget that you just spit up on that girl around the corner? This is the only place. I got some serious issues here. I don't connect well with people. I can draw them in, but I can't keep them. They want to stay, but I'm uncomfortable with them staying. It's too emotional. Too much work. So that's what I'm trying to do now. I'm in my 60s. And I'm trying to learn how to have intimate relationships with people. Instead of what I, you know, me and these people, we were sitting down in the lobby down there and we were talking about, and this is what we were talking about, is how people, she said, people just love you. But I ain't into all that. Don't be calling me no every day, trying to come over my house and all that old kind of shit and think we're going to ride around all week and doing shit together. I ain't got time for all that shit. I'm home looking at TV. You know? And there's a part of me that's okay with that. But then there's this other part of me that wants to know what it would be like if I could do the kind of things that I see these other men and women doing. They go over each other's house, hang out and shit, be cooking food together, playing. I don't play no cards, none of that stuff. I'm strictly a shopper. I go to the mall. I go by myself. I don't want no company. Don't be calling me. And no, I ain't coming to pick you up. You know, the whole time I've been here, I ride in the meeting by myself and out of the meeting by myself. And if you saw me walk down the hall, you wouldn't believe it. People will stop me and speak. Because I'm a more pleasant person now. But I can't do that intimacy shit. From my upbringing, you know, when you live in a house where there's domestic violence, you don't bring people home. When you got a drunk father passed out in the living room on the couch and pissed on himself, you don't bring people home. You know how to keep people out of your house. And that's old behavior I got. And it's hard. It's real hard. To let people into my home. My home is my sanctuary. I want to get better with it, but it's hard. That's why I stay. I stay because there's still stuff that needs to be done. I'm not healed yet. So I don't know why the other people stay. Some of them keep it a secret, you know, and then sometimes I talk to old timers and they be having problems too, but they don't talk about it. I'm scared not to talk about it. You know, so I keep coming back because this thing has worked for me. What 12 doctors told me it couldn't happen. That's why I keep coming back. And so I get the benefits. You get what you put in it. So that's it. I don't have no jokes. Sometimes I had jokes. I don't have jokes at meetings. All my jokes come outside. When I'm in here fighting for my life. So if I made you sad, I'm sorry. Don't be sad for me. My life is good. Long as they keep the doors of Narcotics Anonymous open, my life is good. Thank you for letting me share.